That's what he's thought
Blog
about it. Let's
Talk
give him
Radio.
No, he really needs to think about it.
Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of RumRadio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and RumRadio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time, and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on RumRadio.org.
Halfway houses.
Bravo.
I'll call around if you like and see.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Mom. That's Mom out in the audience. We have one person. That's my mother. She comes in every Sunday. She travels a long, long way to get here, but she makes it. Every sometimes a little late, but she's there. Thanks again, Mom, for the support. We can count on you. Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the unknown universe, which is, if you want a little bit, the GSO. That's not the KGB, but the General Service Organization of Alcoholics Anonymous has produced through the auspices of the Grapevine, which is our monthly meeting in print, a book, and it's called One-on-One Sponsorship. It's the first time this organization, since its inception 79 years ago, has produced such a work. We believe that sponsorship is coming back to the forefront of recovery, and we couldn't be more pleased. That's the focus of Rum Radio, is one-on-one sponsorship. So great going, guys. Pick that up and keep this thing moving. It helps a lot of people. Millions have been helped over the years. As a disclaimer, this is not AA. This is not NA. This is not CA. This is Rum Radio and RumRadio.org. We're closest to Paranoids Anonymous.
But
the only problem is nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, that's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama. And they do this as a public service presentation. We also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine, a finer recovery journal that affords us some print space from time to time. And I gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B. Harold, you got anything going in the background? I hear some overspray.
Yeah. Okay, so you're looking for a three-quarter house, rehab, or halfway.
Well, that's important. Were you breathing? Well, let's try to keep the breathing down.
None in fourth bed.
Oh my God!
Well, you won't always be breathing, so hey.
Right. Okay.
We do this as a public service presentation. Okay, so we got Today Magazine, and my co-host Harold B. is a family intervention specialist, and he does the fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the country, so does the nation, and so does the world. Children have been brought up without being given correct principles. If you give children correct principles, they can teach themselves. Without these principles, they grow up on the mean streets, latchkey kids, empty lot weeds. You know, that's how they grow up. And, of course, drugs and alcohol become part of their family experience with the groups, the clubs, the gangs, all of that. So in our prisons, Harold goes to the prisons. Prisons locally have stopped us in the ability to bring the message to them. Because of financial cutbacks, they don't have the manpower to babysit while we're in there. So they've cut us back. They won't let AA or any of the ministries as well going to the prisons. We're down to anger management, and Harold is a clinical therapist, and he is able to do that. So, Harold, tell us how you're doing tonight.
Well, I'm doing great. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about how recovery really works. Working with other people is the mainstay of my recovery life, and all of my friends and sponsors and sponsees. So it's really a pleasure to be able to come on and talk about what working with others is all about. I've had some very disturbed families that I've been working with these days. I had the privilege of doing two interventions with families, and the person they were worried about are teenagers. Both were successful. Both are in treatment centers and really being helped a great deal. So another thing that we have come up a lot is suicide prevention. Child suicide is on the rise. It's really tragic, and but it is preventable. So we'll have to talk on one of our programs about suicide prevention more than we have. There's also information on the website rumradio.org about suicide prevention and the way that fits with recovery. I really appreciate Joseph for the things he's shared about that, his personal experience. So I also want to mention to our listeners that this is a public service that we provide. Both the radio program and the website, rumradio.org, is offered as a public service. This is our way of giving back in gratitude for the recovery that we're experiencing right now. Joseph does not make money from the website or the radio program. He's invested thousands out of his own pocket to create it and maintain it. I appreciate him for doing that, and I want our listeners to know that. I don't have the chat room open yet, but I plan to work on that as we do the rest of our introduction. So that's what I'd like to say. And the phone number, if you'd like to call in, 949-534-0621. That's 949-534-0621. Or you could chat by going to rumradio.org, click the live button in the upper right. You'll find Blog Talk, and there's our chat room there. Thank you. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Thank you for those kind words. And, you know, like I like to say, that's enough about me. Would someone else like to talk about me? And before we get started, we always like to start off with the third step prayer. The third step prayer is found in the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. I like to use the basic text because all 12-step programs derive from this original understanding. Now, only the first step and almost all the other, I think if not all the other 12-step recovery programs, the first step is the only step that mentions the addictive substance or the problem or the addiction. All the other 11 steps, 11/12 of the 12-step program, is what we call the solution or design for living. So it's all pretty close in there once we get into it. The important thing is on step one is that if you haven't the specific information of what happened, if you don't have, you might have sympathy, but you don't have empathy. So step one is about empathy. So having said that, the third step is usually, this is the first assignment I give to my sponsee once he goes from prospect to sponsee, if I grade, I've qualified him. And I ask him to call 30 or so, 20 or whatever men from his home group, get a home group, and ask permission to recite the third step prayer to them every day for the next 30 days. And that should be about how long it should take for us to get through the steps. As I find, timely is more important than thorough. you know, can sorrow rob timely? And I think if we keep this in a timely manner, our ability to attain and maintain sobriety becomes exponential. So we're going to go through this fairly quickly to get you all 12 steps so now you can get back into the trenches and give it back. And the reason why I think that's important, two reasons. One, the one immunity we have from alcohol and drugs is intensive work with another alcoholic. This activity works when other activities fail. Wow. So getting into that trip, but you can't give away something you don't have. So you quickly get it, and you quickly give it away. And that's really, if you want to know the steps, you have to teach the steps. And I think we're missing some of that today, and this is where our focus and sponsorship, to give it back, to get it, give it back. The other reason is, once they have the 12 steps in them, even if they go back out again, they're never going to drink and drug again with impunity. The newcomer's life's blood to AA, just like the old timer's the backbone. But there's nothing so tormented as a head full of AA and a belly full of booze. So once you got them that information, if nothing else, you've ruined their drinking career and drugging career forever. There's no guarantees, but it's a good way to get started. And this is the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen. Amen. Amen.
Thank you. There you go. All right. Well, now to introduce our interview for tonight. You know, usually we do people of note because they have better jokes. And we also do the regular Joe because who could put a yardstick on a miracle? But we do have a person of note, Jason Stewart, a person in long-term recovery and a comedian and a great story. I think you'll be enthralled. So, Jason, tell us how you doing and what was it like?
Hi, how are you guys?
Good.
Hello.
Thank you.
Well, I've been in, how's it like in recovery, or how's it like as an actor and comedian, or how's it like?
Well, let's start off with recovery, and then let's do the recovery first. You know, I like to do like what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, your story, and then we can get into your acting and your comedic career and or anything else that you want to promote or discuss.
Sure. No,
or
I don't have any
affiliation
to promote. I'm just here to be of service and spread the word. I've been in the program for close to 24 years. I started in OA and went on to Al-Anon, and what I guess the way it started was, I always say that I come from a family where my mother was a very, very big star, but she didn't have a film, and my father was a king, and he didn't have a country. So I grew up with two very, very egotistical people. Not that they were bad people in any way, shape, or form, but parenting wasn't really something that they were adept at. They were really, really young. My father had been in the Holocaust and not the camps, but the ghettos, like in the movie Piano. And my mother grew up very poor, living in Brooklyn, and was 17 when she got married. So by the time she was 25, she had three kids and lost her wedding ring in the snow and said to my father in New York, does that mean that we're not married anymore? So that's how things were going. It wasn't exactly
She was just hoping. She was hoping that it would end,
yes. And she stayed for another 15 years. And my mom had a series of affairs, and my dad and her didn't really ever really get along really well. They were always on the wrong side of everything. And being the middle child, you know, and being gay made me different. I didn't feel connected to them. I think that, you know, I didn't feel connected to anything because I felt like a foreigner. And I think that I remember seeing Rhoda on television and thinking, oh, God, so you could be fat and be funny. So I would use food as a way of protecting myself. And I remember doing that at a very young age. I was teased. I was beat up. I was bullied. you know, as a kid for being gay. I didn't, people were calling me names before I really even knew what it was. So it became my drug of choice, as they say. And as the years went on, I tried all sorts of different things. When I was 21, I called the Suicide Prevention Center. And I used to say that I called it because I didn't have any money and I couldn't afford a shrink. And I did call because I was suicidal. I didn't know what to do with my feelings or where to put them. So it took me a number of years to get to the rooms. Someone had taken me once to them, and I was just too young. It's not an easy program to be in recovery. You know, if you really want to be the best person you can be, it's a lot of work. It's not always easy, but I think the outcome is what's important. And it's really changed my life in such a profound way. There's no way to short shrift it in any way, shape, or form, really. It's given me a language to, with my family. Now, today, my mom and I are really close. My dad has since passed away. And it's given me a way to realize that people aren't, you know, don't have to be who you want them to be, but you can still love them and detach with love. So people can be in your life, you know, with your family, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the family of origin. You can create a family with friends and lovers and husbands and wives and all that kind of stuff.
Now, let me ask you, you say you started in the program with Al-Anon, right? You started Al-Anon or OA?
OA, the food. Yeah, I had a terrible bulimic problem. And, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. When
How
I started bulimia? Probably 16, 15 or 16.
Now bulimia, that's where you look in the mirror and you don't like what you see. Is that the deal?
No. Bulimia is throwing up.
Yeah, I know, but the reason you do that is because you always feel like you're fat or you're not comely.
I think it's a form of control, too. I think it's a big, it's a form of control, of controlling what goes in and out of your body. I think I felt really out of control as a kid. I felt
and the only
that
control
I had
that you'd have, yeah, the only control you would have would what went in and out of your mouth, and that's it.
I think so, yeah. And I used, you know, in my house, in the Jewish family, food was a reward.
Sure.
You know, I think that it was a way of communicating with every way of being a part of everything. And, you know, in those days, my father in the war, people didn't have food to eat. So to have food was a positive thing. So for them, they were being kind to me. For me, it just seemed forced always.
Interesting. I know I'm Italian, but I grew up in a Jewish neighborhood, and you couldn't go into a Jewish home without eating. They wouldn't let you leave unless you ate something. You had to
became,
eat. Look, I'm sorry, Mrs. Goldberg, I just had dinner. It's okay. You like this. Here, have another one.
Oh, my mother would look at you and go, oh, God, you look like you gained a couple pounds, and then 2 minutes later, why aren't you eating dinner?
I know. What's the matter? Don't you like my cooking? Come here. Come over here.
I love
Jewish people. They're the great. They're the best.
If you didn't take two or three, you know, servings of something, my mother would think you didn't like it.
Yeah, yeah. And she'll let you know it, too. Yeah, yep. I know the feeling. So now what happens now? Okay, so you're going into Overeaters, and you're addressing this.
It took me a long time to really understand, to really understand the language of the program. For me, it wasn't really just the food. It was really about, I think of myself as being in the 12-step program. I don't think of myself as being an OA or Al-Anon. I think of myself as being in a program that gave me a better life, that taught me how to communicate with people, that taught me how to have more serenity, that taught me to be in my own shoes and be where I am. And when I upset somebody, to promptly apologize and promptly admit it. You know, when I don't know what's going on and I'm afraid of something, to make a couple calls, ask some other people, say, hey, what do I do with this? You know, to wait a second before I press that button on the email and respond to somebody or make a call to somebody, to remember to be kind, to, you know, the thing I learned the most is shut up, and shut up. That's what I learned the most, is not everybody has to have my opinion or know about me, or, you know, it doesn't always have to be, it's not always, you know, it's not always about me and what I'm thinking or what my, what I'm thinking about something, what I'm feeling. People actually have their own thoughts that don't involve me.
Well, that's a great point, Jason. That's great.
Because I used to think that everything was about me. I'd go into auditions and I'd think that everything, you know, what was going on in the room was me. And that's where I really sort of got it. And I took that into my life, knowing that things go on have nothing to do with me. And they're none of my business.
That's a great point.
Well, the alcoholic, and it's only one part of it. I mean, the alcoholic, we lean on that because that's the original 12 steps was the big book, which addressed
alcoholism. It's all about wanting to check out.
Yes.
Whether you're having sex to do it, whether you're shopping or drinking or eating or throwing up or stealing or spending too much money or, you know, doing drugs or smoking pot or whatever it is, you know, when you don't, when you do something to such an extreme that you're checked out and you don't know what's going on. And I think most people in this society are checked out, you know.
Yes.
And it's because that's what we're sort of taught to do.
The alcoholic is self-centered in the extreme. You know, I like to think that all the thing that the alcoholic is, everybody does it, except people in addiction seem to be that much more self-directed, selfish, self-centered.
We're sort of taught in this society. It's about the society, about we're sort of taught to check out. I live in California in Los Angeles, which is a very, we're sort of on the forefront of recovery. I think it's very different here than it is in other countries. And also in different states. I've gone to 12-step meetings all around the country, all different kinds. And it's very special here because it is about, you know, there can be alcoholic or, you know, compulsive behavior, and someone doesn't have to be using. It's a behavior that comes from using, that comes from checking out in some way, so you're not aware of anything other than what's going on with you.
Good point.
Actually, Austin is a lot like that. Being more of a liberal area. Here,
Are you in Austin?
No, I'm in Houston. Houston is sort of like a redneck New York. This is the only place where you... It's the only place where your doctor might be driving a pickup truck or a dually with a gun rack on the back. It's not for lack of education. They're just that way. That's the way it is. This is sort of like the belt buckle of the Bible Belt.
Well, don't get me going on guns. That's all I have to say. I'm a big, big gay liberal Jew, so that's me, and I'm proud of it. I'm proud of that big L, as much as I'm proud of my recovery. Just think there's just too much hate going on in the world.
I like to think of this way. It's you ever hear misery loves company? It's not altogether true. Misery demands company.
Well,
I think
there's just
a lot of miserable people, and they want company.
You don't have to go. You can say no.
Just say no. No, no is a complete sentence. I've always had a hard time with that. If I learned that early on, I'd be king right now.
A big, big promoter of. You were talking about doing the steps slowly. Is that what you had said before early on?
No, no, quickly.
Quickly, good, because I believe doing them quickly, too, and doing them badly and imperfectly.
There you go. Yes, we're on the same
There is
page.
No right way to do it. And those who do them will know that, or have done, I've done them four times. You will do them, you know, over different times in your life, and you're at different places, and you'll do them for different reasons, and you'll do them to a different extent. Now, for me, it's always worked better for me to do things verbally. That's just who I am, because I'm somewhat dyslexic.
Right.
I've never been, you know, and that's just what's worked best for me. I think one would, should find what works best for them, and to do that, and to find a sponsor that does that right for you. I think the idea of doing them and being forced to do it in a way that doesn't, where you're not, if you're not getting anything out of it, you know, follow direction, try it. Always try something. And if it doesn't work, move on and do something else. But don't stop. Don't not do something. Because whatever you're doing is probably right for
you. Yeah, we're into the keep a moving category. On the website, as a matter of fact, we have a post. We have four videos and a series of 12 written articles about taking someone through the steps in 24 hours just using the big book. Now, you don't have to do it in 24 hours.
Yeah, the old alcoholic way was to do it all in a weekend, I think, or two or three days, right?
Yeah, a couple days, yeah. You would have to do the surrender. I have it on the website. You had to do a surrender, which was the acknowledgement on your knees of the first three steps before you could go to the meeting, and then you did the restitution steps. There's only six at the time, within a matter of days, and then you went out and made your restitution, and you went out looking for a sponsee or a prospect. It was done very quickly.
I'm much more in agreement with that than taking years to do it, what I've seen people do. I think the procrastination and the perfection doesn't work as well.
No.
I mean, there are three parts to the program. There's spiritual part of the program. There's physical recovery, and then there's emotional recovery. And you should be practicing all three all the time. That's my two cents.
Well, yeah, the big book says at the time when they were going through in a more rapid pace, 50% got it right away, and the other 25% after a few relapses. That was a 75% recovery rate, which is huge. That's not what we're experiencing today, and I believe what's happened, and a lot of folks will chime in on this, is that the meetings have become the solution. I had a sponsee from New Jersey.
For some people, you have to bring it into your life. It has to be part of your life.
I had a sponsee from New Jersey when I first got to Houston post-op, the way they did it was a step a month club. So this way at the end of the year, and at the end of the year, then you could sponsor because that's what's recommended in the pamphlet 1 year, you know, before you sponsor. So this way they did a step a month and they really dragged it out, which was crazy making. And then I had a sponsee from New Jersey that when they read to wait a year, you had to go to meetings for a year before you worked the steps, and then you didn't work the steps with a sponsor because the sponsor wasn't mentioned in the big book. You went to step studies to work the steps. How crazy is that?
Well, not
That's
crazy,
how far away.
Yeah, not crazy, but I think probably a way that it wouldn't work, you know, as well as really jumping in and going for it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It will not.
Yeah.
Our experience is no, it will not work as well. And now, even if you go through quick and it's not as thorough, you know, and into the big book says thorough will pay off and pay off handsomely, yes. The thing is, you could still have a degree of being thorough and timely. And from what I found is the timely, you know, can thorough rob timely. So most of the folks that I work with, when they go through quickly, even if they go back out, you've got all 12 steps in them. I look like force feeding a goose. I'm shoving those 12 steps down their gullet. And even if they do not stay sober, I've ruined their drinking career. They're never going to drink and drug again with impunity because there's nothing more tormented than a head full of AA and a belly full of booze. Or any of the other 12 steps. Once you've done the 12 steps, now you know better.
Yeah, I think I did it probably not. The first time, I don't think I did it you know, I did it in a completely different way. I was much younger, and, you know, as I got older, they became more in depth and more specific.
Yeah, most people do more than one. Bill W., we know, did 2 fifth steps. Now, we don't know if he did 2 fourths, but he did a second fifth with Father Dowling. So it might have been things he didn't want to tell his first sponsor, whatever, but we know he did at least. And some people in the program work the steps several times over a lifetime. So to do it quickly the first time is okay because things are going to come up later anyway. But that's my experience. All right, so let's get back to you. So you went to OA, but that didn't seem to wash out initially, right? You didn't.
No,
you didn't
I
didn't. Connect.
I did. I went there for 16 years, and then after
okay.
a while, you know, I think I got my problem was is the principles, the personalities in the program. I kept wanting to see results in people, and there wasn't enough results for me, and I kept looking at other people instead of looking at myself. And then I sort of, you know, went in and out. I never stopped working my program in my life. I've never stopped it. It's always been a part of my life. But then there became a couple years where I was going in and out of meetings. And then I found Al-Anon, and that's become something that sort of stick with me quite a bit.
Well, I'm an Al-Anon.
What's that?
An Al-Anon, an alcoholic that goes to Al-Anon. I'm an Al-Anon.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, there's always another little phrase or another thing.
I made that up.
I'm good with stuff like that.
Okay. I'm an Al-Anon. I go up to Crested Butte Mountain Conference, and it's a dual conference of Al-Anon and AA, and when they have meetings, they have dual chairs. They'll have an Al-Anon chair and an AA chair, and then the meetings are structured around that environment, which is pretty
wonderful.
Cool. Yeah, it is. And you don't get as much that push, you know, that, you know, we're real alcoholics and we can only deal with other real alcoholics, you know, all that. I'm not big on the closed meeting format, although, you know, there's doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs that want to keep their anonymity, and I could see, okay, well, that's they need to do that. And that's
you know,
fine.
It's interesting. I have a, you know, for me, because I'm in show business, I have the same face no matter what and the same voice, so people recognize me all the time. But I do like the idea of talking around it because I think it brings up certain things for certain people, and it makes me feel more a part of the crowd not to. And I sort of like that for me. At first, I didn't understand it either when I first went. But then after a while, I really did, and it became really clear to me that that it really did work, and all these things are done for a reason. And sometimes I just need to shut up and go to the meeting and just sort of do it. And that's what the meeting is, and stop trying to run it or change it or give my opinion about how I think things should be done and just sort of butt out because I love to give an opinion about almost everything.
Well, you preach it to the choir, Chief.
Yeah, I think I could run everything better.
Well, I know I can, but nobody's asked. You know, the number
nobody's
one fear
asked
is speaking
us,
in
no,
public.
No, nobody has asked us at all, but we're certainly good.
No,
fine.
I know.
So I just go into the meeting, and if it's not a meeting, you know, take what you want, leave the rest. People don't realize that about the program. You have to find out what really works for you and make a commitment to do that, and there is a meeting, and you won't understand it when you first come. It's very, you know, it's most of the time, unless you have a vocabulary of this, unless you're in the recovery world, if you're not and it's something new to you, but you probably will take you a little while to understand everything that's going on. I mean, I didn't at first. And it's also where you're at in your life. But also just to know that these are things that are going to change your life significantly if you just keep showing up.
I have, you know, some agreements with that. I go by the big book, and it says, go find the prospect and start working on them. And then it also says, if the person you're working with is not interested, go find someone else who's brilliant enough to take what you're giving them.
So we don't do that. How about an OA? How do they do that? Do you go find your sponsor, or does the sponsor find you?
I think both have happened. I think it's going to happen the way it's going to happen. You know, one should, I think, be open to however it happens and see what's right. I don't have an opinion about that, honestly.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen it happen both ways. So most of the time, if the agreement has gone the other way in AA, where, you know, people raise their hand and said, who's available to sponsor, would raise their hand, and then the sponsee is supposed to go find them. And I'm going, well, wait a minute. People have just walked in here. They have no idea of the jargon. They have no idea of the culture. They don't know what a sponsor does. They have no lay of the land. Doesn't it make more sense that someone who's already worked the steps, isn't available to sponsor, to go get the new guy or the new girl and start working with them? I was in an Al-Anon meeting up at Lakewood during one of our hurricanes down here. And this Al-Anon speaker, she said, well, you know, I raised my hand for years and nobody would come and get me for a sponsor. So she said, eventually I got frustrated. So there was a new lady. She said after the meet, she said she was the first time there. After the meeting, I went up to her and said, hi, my name is Jane. I'm your sponsor. And she says it worked out really well because the lady, the person didn't know that that is not the way it's normally done.
See, I think we get stuck in that a lot.
Yeah, it used to be the way it was done, but somehow it changed.
Which doesn't make sense to me. We, you know, okay, we put it on a higher spiritual plane somehow. You're supposed to be drawn spiritually to this one person. Now, of course, you usually get them because they've said something, they shook your hand, they were glib in the meeting. But what if they didn't talk? What if they didn't chirp up? How would you know this guy would have been a good sponsor, or this girl would have been a good sponsor if she didn't speak? By sense of smell? You know, putting that onus on the new person is requiring them to come to a lot of meetings. Okay, keep coming back, and as you're sitting in the meeting, now you're going to get the culture, you're going to get the jargon, you're going to get the way we do business by osmosis. Did you ever hear of osmosis?
No.
If you sit in enough meetings, the message is going to come to the floor, up the chair, up your butt, and into your head. Now you got it. That's osmosis. You don't have to do this now, see?
Oh, my God.
I know. Well, that's how I got it. I mean, I did it for years without – I avoided the steps like the plague. I mean, I got to four. Of course, you could do 1, 2, 3 sitting in the traffic light, but 4 is the one I kind of avoided. I was going to figure I was going to do this without doing the rest of them. But that's what we expect the newcomers to do. So by the time they're in the meeting, the pain has gone away because now they're being accepted into a new tribe and everybody's loving on them and they're talking in the meetings and the pain is dissipating. They're not drinking, so all that stuff's going away. And you ask them, well, you're working the steps. And they go, well, I'm staying sober. Is that not enough? And we think a man unthinking who says sobriety is enough. What's your take on that?
Sobriety is just the beginning. It's not really
exactly.
That's the behavior that, you know, that comes from the pain. I mean, after you stop drinking, stop shopping, stop eating, stop, you know, having sex, whatever it is you're doing, your drugs, then it's time to get to the real work and working on yourself and what caused you to do that.
Yeah, the causes and conditions. That's what it's called. We get down to causes and conditions. Now, when you first did the steps,
I'm still working on, believe me.
Oh, yeah, it's a progress. That's why they call it a trudge. You know, it's a never end. There's no perfection at the end of this road. There's just all there is progress. That's all we can expect in the program. Although a lot of people don't realize it's a simple program. It really is quite simple. I mean, the statements are quite simple. There's nothing hidden. Everything is in the forefront.
but it's not easy. Changing your point of view and to a more spiritual life is difficult for most folks. And the reason why some people do it, the only reason they do it, is because to save their own lives. If
oh,
the pain,
God,
yes. I put it to you this way. I look at pain as a fuel. And if I could catch the new guy soon enough, well, he's still in a lot of pain. That's fuel to work him through the steps in a timely manner. Once that fuel is dissipated, because he's languishing in the meetings now, he's chatting, he's got chatterama going, he's got a new a love interest, he's just buying a home, he's got a car, all the things are coming back now, he's starting to feel good about himself, and now the work of the steps go wanting. Is that your experience, or is it different in a way?
For me?
Yeah.
I find it's all different for different people. I don't have a set thing of what of how I think people. I think everybody reacts differently. There's all different kinds of people. I basically primarily go to Al-Anon meetings now. Occasionally I'll go to an OA meeting or an AA meeting just to see what's going on. But I just think it's a case by case basis. I also don't like to make generalizations about people. I don't think it helps.
Well, what we're doing tonight is sharing our experience, strength, and hope. And that's about all we can do with anyone, whether they've been around a long time or whether they're new. I don't sit down with people and give advice, but I will share my experience, and it may be of some value, it may not. But that's all we're doing here on the radio program is sharing.
Yeah, I feel the same way,
experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't want to generalize. We just want to share our experience honestly, and maybe it'll work.
Sometimes it's hard, because I just think everybody comes in with a different set of things, and there's so many different kinds of people. That's what's really cool about being in the 12 Steps. I mean, there's so many different kinds of people. You'll meet people that you wouldn't meet in your regular daily life.
No,
yeah,
we're a group
being,
that we wouldn't mix.
Yeah, you meet some people you would, but some people you wouldn't, know at all.
Yeah, you would never run into them.
Yeah, my best friend David is a cable man. I don't think I would have ever met him.
If it wasn't for the program. Let's get back to the now, Christian. That you work the steps. Did you have any difficulty with any of the steps? Was all the steps easy?
God,
did you work out?
Oh, yes.
The fourth step. Tell me about your fourth step.
I think it was really difficult. The biggest thing was the hardest thing, is forgiving myself. That was the hardest one, is to apologize to myself. How difficult how hard I was on myself, more than I would have, more than I would be to anybody else.
Good
if anybody treated me the way I treated myself, man, I don't think I'd talk to them.
So your fourth step was a dead. How long did it take you to do your fourth step?
The fourth time around? God. It took me a couple weeks to do it because I did it with my sponsor and I did it verbally.
Okay.
And,
to be written. So you didn't write anything down at all? There was nothing written?
No, I did. I wrote the same way I do stand-up. I wrote it in bullet points.
Oh, that's fine. I had a sponsor. I had 34 years at the time, Bob, and he told me, I said, because on the website I put certain agreements that I found in my experience writing it, and I said, how long should it be? Because I did an abbreviated fourth and fifth step that was around about 6 years ago. He said he told me a story that he had a sponsee that wrote a one sentence fourth step and had been sober for 30 years, but he wouldn't tell me what the sentence was. Yeah,
that's funny.
He wouldn't tell me. So what's
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know what's going to work for people, and how something, how what works for different kinds. It's really hard to know.
Right. Well, that's one of the agreements we have on the website, where if it's not working for both parties, the sponsor and the sponsee, you can change partners. And a lot of the new folks don't know that. They think that, you know, they're shooting craps. They go in there and they pick this guy, and the guy's not available, or he really doesn't know what he's doing, or, you know, he's never sponsored anybody before, but he's agreed to it, but he hasn't got a clue what a sponsor does or doesn't do. And the other guy's struggling, and he thought, well, look, I picked this guy, and we're stuck at the hip, you know, we're attached at the hip. I can't do anything.
Right. If it's something is not working for you, I've had sponsors disappear. We just didn't hit it off. I once by a sponsor who didn't like the way I did my steps and told me to redo it, my step four. And I said, okay, well, at first I thought, well, maybe I should just do what he says. And I thought, maybe this isn't right for me. And you know, I got a different sponsor and it worked.
Now, how about your fifth step? Now, did you get spiritual relief from your fifth step? Did you have an awakening or experience?
I think it took longer for me. You know, it took longer. So, I had to let it sink in. You know, growing up, I had very little religion or God in my life. So I think it took it was harder for me to find. You know, it took me harder to find that experience. And
so usually it'll happen, though, by the ninth step. If you don't get it by the fifth, surely by the ninth, something happens.
Yes, I think it happened more that way through service.
No, you did the service after. Did you have a problem with the six steps? You did the fifth. Did you go home, pull the book down? Did you do all that as it's outlined?
Yes.
You know?
Oh, okay, definitely.
Okay, you did that. So you went over, you know, and then your sixth step, you had no problem with that? You were willing to turn over
I didn't have problems. I didn't have a problem with doing any of it. I think it sinks into a deeper level. You know, knowing that there's a higher power that'll take care of me, and figuring out what that was for me, and having it, you know, change a little, if that's okay that it changes as I get older.
Oh, sure, that's why it's.
You know,
I believe that's the way the program
is
designed.
I kept thinking there was just a certain way. I didn't get that. I thought there was a perfect way to do it, and I was going to figure out the perfect way to do it the first time, and. You know, I didn't know how to do that.
Bill W. called it spiritual kindergarten. So we come in and, see, it's spiritual kindergarten. So you're not expected to have the God of Isaac, Abraham, and Jacob when you walk through the door. What you're expected to do is just believe that there's something bigger than you. It could be either from a tower or just a head and a shoulder, but just something or some concept that's more powerful than you are, and that concept could relieve your alcoholism because you're not able to do it on your own.
Yeah, I wasn't able to figure it out at first. I was not able to figure that out. And now
you were compelled. Who's your higher power now?
I think my higher power is the program. Connected to that. And that's what I think of my higher power is when I go in those rooms, it's my church, it's my therapy, it's my place to just sort of let go. You know, let go of all that.
Well, the program is a lot like, I wrote a piece like that. The program is a lot like a church. I mean, we start with a prayer, it's called an invocation. We end with a prayer. It's called a benediction. And no matter what the meeting topic, it's a gratitude meeting. So an attitude of gratitude is a prayer unto God. So you're going to get a spiritual bump every time you go into a meeting. I mean, it is. And we even have high priests in there. They call big book thumpers. You know, they're going to tell you exactly what the writ is, you know, and what's acceptable in that church.
But then just to let people who are, you know, watching at home or listening, you know, let them know, you know, you don't like one meeting, you go to the next one. That's just the way, you know, it is. You don't have to worry about all that.
No, not at all.
Yeah, you don't have to feel like, and you're not going to like every meeting. That's just the way it is. I mean, not every meeting is going to have that spiritual moment. Sometimes you'll be bored, and sometimes it'll be the best meeting ever, and sometimes somebody will say something, you know, that just makes you feel, you know, wonderful, and sometimes, you know, you just can't wait for it to end.
I don't like to talk early on in the meeting, so because it's a two-bladed sword. If I talk early on, I feel compelled to stay because I figure, well, the folks are polite enough to listen to my BS, so now I think it's just polite that I have to sit through this thing. But if I don't speak early enough, then I spend the rest of the meeting drinking of what I'm going to say. So, and then I can't hear what everybody is saying.
So sometimes I just sort of sit there and I just sort of, be with myself and just sort of be quiet and just sort of, you know, become one with what's going on in the room. That's what I try to do sometimes.
Oh, that's nice. You know, a fella did this in Austin, Chris C., and he said in a meeting one time, what he does in a meeting was real spiritual and real interesting. He went around the room, you know, with his eyes and his mind and blessed everybody in the room.
Oh, that's sweet.
I've done that. After I heard that, done that. And it's a very spiritual, enlivening feeling to do that, where you're participating in the spirit, and that you're not just blabber, you know, because, you know, nothing is so common as the wish to be remarkable. So when I'm not trying to audition or tell you who I am or what I am, you know, I believe if you're talking more than 3 minutes, it's usually all about you anyway. What I'm doing is I'm spiritually connected in the room, but I'm not temporally as connected. My body is there, but my spirit is trying to enliven. It's a good feeling. I'd suggest it to anybody. So, okay, so you got the steps of nine. So in step nine, you were able to go make your amends?
Definitely. That wasn't as hard as making the amends to myself. That was the hardest thing.
And then once you forgave yourself for your wrongdoings and you felt spiritually awakened?
Definitely.
And then how 10, 11, and 12, how do you take a while?
Well, I'm doing it now. I'm constantly trying to be in the moment and trying to spread the message in a positive way when I'm asked. People will say, how do you do this and how do you do that and how did this happen? I say, well, it's because of the 12-step program. And I believe that.
Now, how 10 and 11 and 12, I like to think of those as the growth steps. So some people call it the maintenance steps, but I really believe those are the growth steps. It's I put it to you this way, in step 11, it's prayer is the quarterback, meditation is the feedback, and self-examination is the goal line. And of course, and then 10 is to find out where we still have character defects. Do you work a regular 10, 11 today? Do you do that?
I try to. I'm not so good at it, but I try. I put it the college try. I try in my own way.
Okay.
I think I do it a lot with work because there's so many situations
Okay. Oh, so the way you deal with people.
Oh my God! Every day. Because I want to run everything. I want to be a king of a country. Except I would love to run everything and everybody. And
How about on 12 where it says that you're keeping the principles? So the principles are, you know, the 12 principles, honesty, fidelity, fellowship, all of that. Do you work on those or that's just
yes.
Do the best you can?
Yes, I do. I mean, I work on that every day. And if I say something or do something, I promptly admit it. I don't wait around. You know, I try very much. If I'm not sure, I call someone. If I'm uncomfortable about something, I make a call. You know, and I say, hey, I'm uncomfortable with this. I got to make this call and fire my. I had to fire my agent recently, and I really liked her as a person. It just wasn't working. So I actually had someone here in the room with me, you know, do it because I was so uncomfortable with doing it, and I didn't want to do it in a way and pointing my finger at this person. I just wanted to say, hey, it was great working with you, and it's not working for me anymore. You know,
Discovered why it's important? You know why I've discovered why it's important to admit when we're wrong promptly? Because it's easier to eat crow while it's still warm.
You are great. I am terrible at these little phrases. I don't know any of them. I'm so bad at it. But you're great. I've got to listen to the show more often.
The website has a lot of this stuff. So why I'm so good at these is because I've put them on the website. So I've dragged all over the world for wisdom nuggets, and I make my own. And so I sprinkle the website with all this stuff to make it informative and interesting and humorous. You know, because we have the big book, we have the information, but now the presentation is the key. You're a professional. Presentation is everything.
That's what my mom used to say. Put it on a plate and make it look nice.
It could be the same old schlock of whatever it is, but if it looks good, you got something.
Exactly.
Exactly. So 12, I've got the 12 is sponsorship. You sponsored anybody?
Yes.
Or? Okay,
yes,
I've
sponsored a lot of people over the years. And but what I've been doing also in my life is I've been mentoring young kids, and not just their sponsors, but mentoring them.
Sure.
And I've been doing with 3 or 4 kids lately, and that's really
great. You know, the big book says to turn your mind to someone you can help. It doesn't say you have to turn your mind to another alcoholic or another overeater, or another Al-Anon. It just says, turn your mind to someone you can help. And a lot of people get lost in that. You can be of service without being of service inside your particular program. You can be of service to your neighbor. Somebody wrote a whole book on it, how to be of service and do it anonymously. One guy said that what he did when he went to a toll booth, he would pay the toll for the guy behind them. Yeah, you know, this way they're giving back without any recognition or acclaim. Wow, that's the deal. It really is the bomb. You know, taking in your neighbor's trash can or mowing his lawn, you're out there anyway. And one of my neighbors got mad because I was trimming her edge, and she didn't like. She was so uncomfortable somebody serving something to her that she couldn't stand it. You ever notice, like, it's easier sometimes to give than it is to receive? So what I've realized that service is a spiritual component. Most spiritual...
No, I do like people giving me things, so don't...
What do you like?
I do.
Not everybody. Not everybody. I know. Not everybody does, though. Some people have a hard time accepting other people's service, and I believe service is a spiritual concept, and most spiritual concepts have a duality, and the duality to service is graciousness, allowing someone to serve you. Both parties are edified in that manner. If you refuse the graciousness of somebody or the service of somebody, neither one gets the benefit from it. So something we have to consider. You know, some people are takers and some people are givers, you know, and coming together, the program puts us together. So tell us, do you want to, you know, promotion is a bad word in program. I don't believe promotion is a bad word. Bill W. promoted a better way to stay sober to Dr. Bob, and we promote a better way to stay sober to other people. So I have promotion in press, radio, and films, not one-on-one. So let's remember that, you know, it's about anonymity. So do you have anything that you'd like our listeners to know that what you're doing or how we
well,
can find
you? Well,
if
anybody wants to contact me, they can go to jasonstewart.com, S-T-U-A-R-T. And please, if you want to keep in touch or know what I'm doing, just go there. You can sign up with any of my social media. I have a movie coming out next year with, if anybody's interested, with Alfred Molina, John Lithgow, Marissa Tomei, called Love is Strange. And then another one that was produced by James Franco called Holy Land. And I have a TV pilot that I'm finished editing that I wrote, directed, acted, and produced called
Wow.
Mentor, based on mentoring the kids that that I have. And it's based on my real life.
What's that
called? Mentor. It's called Mentor.
Oh, Mentor. Oh.
Yes.
And
cool,
I just put on our chat room the URL for the YouTube video with your comedy on it, Stuart.
Oh, yeah, you
I
can
mean,
see my comedy anytime you want. Just go to jasonstewart.com. There's a whole, and go to the video page. There's a whole page filled with stuff.
That's great.
Yes, and I answer all my email personally. You know, I try to get to it as much as I can. So you can email me through my website, or you can, you know, say hello on my fan page or my Facebook page, or tweet me or twat me, or every Tuesday I have a radio show. Or rather a podcast, because it's video also, on T Radio V called Absolutely Jason Stewart. And next week I'm interviewing Rick Overton on Tuesday. Wonderful character actor. It's like an actor studio kind of show, but more. And what else? And I'm working here. You know, I work at the local clubs in Los Angeles, the Improv and the Laugh Factory and the Ice House. And so I'd love to, you know, have people come see shows and laugh and have fun. And hopefully I'll get another job very soon.
All right.
That's great.
Well, thank you so much. Any
well,
last words, Harold?
Thanks for having me on. Worth
Harold. You're welcome.
Well, I hope
I think
thank
this
you
has been very informative.
Show.
Yeah, go ahead.
I thank you for having me on the show, and I hope that I helped out somebody. And if I didn't, you know, just keep it to yourself.
Well, this
no.
has been helpful for me. I really appreciate being on, and I appreciate having Jason Stewart on. This has been educational, and I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for giving me an opportunity to give back, Joseph. Thank you.
Oh, yeah,
you're
thank
welcome.
You for having me on. I always appreciate being asked to any of the parties.
You're quite welcome. And in closing, we'd like to remind you that Rum Radio and rumradio.org, we're in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi. We're in 2,800 towns, cities, and villages, and we've had between 300,000 and 400,000 hits to the website. So if you're looking for solid sponsorship information, remember, it's Rum Radio and rumradio.org. And remember, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good
night.
Good night.
Well, thank you guys very much.
You're welcome.
I know it's with you.
Oh, God.
I'm not going to kill you. I just want to talk to you.